is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Danny Gallagher, girls varsity head coach at Magnificat High School, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Lindsay here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight we are jumping on to talk bottom of the barrel of NBA stories. But before we do that,
I think the most successful part of this podcast was how we started tonight, Mike. I just want to say that. I think this is a very good start to the podcast. You and I, Mike did not bring his mouse home and he didn't double click tonight. So I give him mad props, Mike. Congratulations.
Yes, you did a good job. That was some finger dexterity there that I really was able to show off my skills on the laptop mouse pad instead of my external mouse.
Maybe you belong in Overtime Elite.
Maybe, which we will talk about. Very interesting what's going on with Overtime Elite and how that's going to eventually impact the NBA, college basketball. There's just a whole lot of stuff going on. Before we jump into what meager stories there are related to the NBA, just want to make an announcement that we are going to host the very first coaching clinic, Hoopheads, and in conjunction with United Basketball and Matt Smith, who has run clinics in various other places, including one coming up this weekend at the Hoosier Gym in Indiana. It is called the Buckeye Coaches Clinic, and it will be held on Saturday, September 25th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Olmsted Falls High School. Interestingly enough for you, Jason,
that's in your home district. That's my home district. I start school tomorrow. I'm really excited about that. Mm-hmm. Really excited that we get to host this at Olmsted Falls. Even though I had really nothing to do with setting this up, I'm just glad that
We went right above your head to friend of the podcast, head coach Chris Delisio, and Chris will be presenting as one of our clinicians at the clinic. So I'm going to quickly just run down for coaches out there who may be listening. I'm going to quickly just run down the sessions so you'd have an idea of who you're going to hear and what they're going to talk about. So we have seven coaches that are going to come in and speak. Todd McGinnis, the head coach at Case Western Reserve University, is going to talk about using junk defenses. Dave Severns, Los Angeles Clippers player development coach and scout, is going to talk about the five-out offense. We're also going to have a bonus session entitled The Top 10 Mistakes That High School Coaches Make. So if you're a high school coach and you're looking to avoid career mistakes, especially if you're early in your career, this is a great talk that you won't want to miss. We have Rob Brost, head coach at Bolingbrook High School in Bolingbrook, Illinois. He's going to talk about the man left defense. Some people call it the lock left defense, where basically they force every single thing, all the actions to the left side of the floor. So I'm curious myself to hear Rob talk about that one. We have Kyle Barlow, an assistant coach at Ohio University. He's going to talk about competitive individual shooting drills for player development. We have Joe's Decision, who has been on with us a couple times from USA Basketball and Unleashed Potential in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And Joe is going to talk about competitive edge skills and performance model, which is what he does with his clients at Unleashed Potential and what he did when he was the director for basketball skill training for Lifetime Fitness all across the country. So Joe is a fantastic speaker, and his I'm really looking forward to his session and learning more about what he does. Then we have Chris Delisio, head coach at Olmsted Falls, who's going to talk about building and implementing your culture. And finally, Dan DeCrane, who is the head coach at Gilmore Academy, also here in Cleveland. He's going to talk about crafting blobs and slobs, how to install a successful specialty package. So we've got a great lineup, 7 coaches, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Olmsted Falls High School, Saturday, September 25th. You can jump on to the Hoopheads Pod website, and that will get you to a link where you can register for the clinic. If you sign up as one individual coach, it's going to be $75. If you and one or more members of your staff sign up, for each one of you, it'll be $65. So you get $10 off for every coach. Hopefully we'll get a bunch of staffs will come. And we are looking forward to a great clinic. It's going to be our very first one. And we're hoping it's going to be a tremendous success. Get a lot of knowledge, a lot of great coaches here. And hopefully we'll get great attendance. And I think there's a lot of value in the speakers that we have coming in. So hopefully, if you're out there and you're listening and you're looking to improve your coaching, this first Hoopheads United Basketball Clinics Buckeye Coaching Clinic, look for it, sign up for it. It's going to be great. All right, let's move on to the NBA.
All right, the NBA. The first thing we're going to talk about was not even on our original list, Mike. I literally sent you a list at 8 p.m. or 7 p.m. saying, we're really dredging from the bottom of the barrel. This is probably the highlight of our episode, guys, other than the announcement of our Buckeye Coaching Clinic. Like, I don't want to make sure that is the highlight of our episode.
Don't steal the thunder.
But Mike Budenholzer, contract extension. Oh, we're going to get to make fun of Coach Bud for a lot longer, Mike. this is exciting news to me. He got an extension through 2024-2025. I'm going to see your thought. Oh, before I talk about numbers, your thoughts on the extension for Budenholzer through 2024-2025.
I have a serious question for you.
Yes.
Are you ready for my serious question?
Yeah.
Does Coach Budenholzer send at least a small check to Kevin Durant's toe? Can he send Kevin Durant's toe just like a gag check for $10?
Well, maybe he'll invest in Kevin Durant's new philanthropy, Mike. Maybe that's what he'll do.
I feel like sending a gag check for $10 would be a classy move by Mike Budenholzer. In all seriousness, I mean, really, he was one Kevin Durant toe away from being fired probably within 24 hours of that game ending, I would have to guess. And the fact that they persevered, they ended up winning that game in overtime and then moving on and defeating Atlanta and then defeating, obviously, the Suns in the finals, totally rewrites the narrative of what Mike Budenholzer is and his coaching acumen. And I think if you look at this particular playoff run compared to past playoff runs, obviously the result, it's easy to go back and retrograde it in hindsight. But I do think that some of the things that we complained about Coach Bud in the past, I guess my biggest complaint with him was always, hey, can we get Giannis on the floor for more than 31 minutes in a game where if we lose, we're going to go home? And he took care of that early in the playoffs. And then there were obviously things that he could do better. There are things that he could do worse. I think we sometimes attribute a team's success and failure to coaching where maybe it's not necessarily the thing that we should point to. But congratulations to Mike Budenholzer. As I said, everybody can say whatever they want, but he was one toe away from being fired and having to look for a new job. And in a lot of ways, it's nice to see a guy who was so maligned. And look, we've taken
our fair share of shots at him.
But the reality is now that he's an NBA championship coach, there aren't many of those in the league. I don't even know at this point how many guys are active that have won an NBA championship.
We could think about this really quickly, Mike. You got Vogel.
It's not a huge number.
You got Vogel, you got Carlisle, you got Spoelstra, you got Pop.
Ty Lue.
Maybe that's it.
I got to look.
Oh, Nick Nurse.
Nick Nurse.
Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers. So what? Well, maybe we're up to a third of the league already.
That's seven.
That's close. All right. So a fourth of the league.
Not there. No, no, no. I'm just running through them in my head.
I'm looking at the standings.
If we're only talking about head coaches, right? Like they were head coaches when they won the championship, not correct. An assistant
correct.
Coach. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah. So I think that's got to be it.
Steve
I think
Kerr.
Oh yeah, Kerr. How can we forget Kerr? I forgot about Kerr. Does Luke Walton count? Because he was a head coach for part of that season.
No. He had to be the coach while you're winning it.
I was kind of being facetious, but
Carlisle. Did we get Carlisle? You got Carlisle.
I said Carlisle. Yeah. I can't forget about Carlisle. That was a great championship at 20.
All right, so that's it. So we got eight.
Eight. Well, that's still more than I think we thought than we originally thought.
Yeah, that
would have
been more than I would have guessed. Anyway, look, it's still a rather exclusive club. So congratulations to Mike Budenholzer. I think we can say whatever we want about the way that he's coached in the past and some of the things that he did. And there's always different ways that you can look at it. But ultimately, I think playing his guys more minutes, I think some of the adjustments that he made on the defensive end of the floor. To me, I think the move of the finals was putting Drew Holiday onto Chris Paul. And once he did that, I think it just neutralized.
But here, I have a question. Retroactively thinking about it, is that really a move or is it just common sense?
Well, I think you can say...
Are we going to give him that much credit for putting their best defender on the guy that was making... I mean, well, that's just what I'm saying. That's my argument.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. Obviously, Drew Holiday is
either
going to
be like
on
me
Paul.
Saying, that'd be like me saying Kevin Durant should guard LeBron.
Right. I get it. But I guess the point here is that ultimately, and this you can say this for just about any game, that you want to put the players in a position where the players are the ones who determine the outcome. I think that's your job as a coach, to put the players in the best position to be able to determine the outcome. And I think more so than in years past, he was able to do that. So congratulations to Coach Bud. And like I said, he was one toe away from being fired. I mean, he literally would have lost his job, I would have to guess, the next day, based on everything that you read, based on everything that we've seen, based on everything that had led up to that moment. And for that moment to flip and for Milwaukee to go on and win the title and then him to be able to celebrate and then get a contract extension, congratulations to him. I think that, you know, we make fun of Coach Budenholzer here on the podcast sometimes, and we've made fun of other players, coaches, whatever. But ultimately, it's more fun to see somebody succeed than it is to see him fail, unless they're James Harden.
Way to get that qualifier in there, Mike. Good job.
I had to get that in.
All right. So the other coaching news that we'll talk about, Dallas hired a current WNBA player, Kristi Toliver. Now, I'll be completely honest with you. She's an WNBA champion. I've never heard the name Kristi Toliver before, Mike. Have you heard the name Kristi Toliver before?
No.
Honestly. Okay.
No, I have not.
This once again shows, like, I'm not trying to, I don't know the name. I don't think that WNBA does a good enough job promoting the game personally. Whether or not I would watch it, I don't know if it really impacts me watching it or not, but I know Della Don. I know Lisa Leslie.
She just came back.
Yeah, I know Della Don just came back, and she had a good game in her first game back, considering. I know Diana Taurasi. I know Brianna Stewart.
Sue Bird,
yeah. She's been in the league for a while. I don't know. Can you name anyone else? I mean, Lisa Leslie doesn't count. She's been retired for a while.
Now, look, my WNBA knowledge is, I would say, severely limited. I can't say I've watched a WNBA game since maybe their first or second season.
Oh, no. You went to a Cleveland Rockers game, I bet. You went to one Cleveland Rockers game, Mike, right?
I did. I met my wife after a Cleveland Rockers game that I went to. So I do have a connection to the WNBA.
You met her for the first time?
Yeah, I did not meet her at the game, but a buddy of mine and I went to a Cleveland Rockers game. I could not tell you who they played.
And New York after, Liberty?
I could not tell you who they played. The game itself was not embedded in my memory in any way, shape, or form. And then after the game, we were out, and that's where I met my wife. So I do have that connection.
You see, the WNBA did something for you, Mike.
It did do something for me. But I can honestly say I don't think I've watched a full WNBA game. And that's not to say that you don't appreciate women's basketball on the skill level and what those women can do and how good they are. It's just not a product for whatever reason that I just don't sit down and watch it. So congratulations to Christy Tolliver.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. It's interesting that she's going to be a current WNBA player and coaching at the same time. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, maybe
I'm not sure how that works. How does that work?
Well, their seasons don't overlap.
Right, but still, it's not like you're an NBA coach and you get 4 months off in the summer where you don't do anything.
You're not asking the right guy here. I don't know. I mean, all I know is when I read the report, because I read it after I saw it, because I was like, well, that's pretty cool. But then I was like, who is Christy Tolliver? Because I didn't know. So I was trying to get a little bit of background information, and that's already escaped my brain. So whatever. I know she won a championship. I remember that. But I remember in the report it says it's not going to impact, you know, what she does, like coaching is not going to impact it. And if anything, it might make her a better player because she's going to be playing around the NBA players, and maybe she's going to like learn from them and play from them. I don't have like her stats pull up or anything, so I don't know how good of a player she is, but she's got to be at least, you know, serviceable if they're going to put her in a coaching position, right? Like she can't just be, I mean, she has to know what she's talking about, I would guess. I mean, they didn't just hire her to hire her. Because the Mavericks don't really, Cuban's not like into that. Is he into publicity stunts, Mike? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, here's what I'll say. I'm looking at the article as you're talking, and here's what it says. With Tolliver, the Mavericks are getting an assistant with plenty of NBA coaching experience already under her belt. In 2018, she joined the Washington Wizards as a full-time assistant coach on head coach Scott Brooks' staff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
However, but again, I'm not sure I understand exactly the timeline. Tolliver becomes the second woman in Dallas franchise history to serve as an assistant coach. Jenny Busek joined the organization as an assistant in 2018. She has now left the Mavericks, and she's now with the Pacers, which I did know that because I saw that on social media
Carlisle.
A couple weeks ago.
She was in Carlisle.
Correct. And says Tolliver is still an active player in the WNBA with the Los Angeles Sparks. Just this week, her late-game heroics forced overtime against the Atlanta Dream. So she has had a 12-season career in the WNBA, averaging 12 points a game, 2.3 rebounds, 2.5 assists, a three-time WNBA All-Star, and she won championships with the Sparks in 2016 and the Mystics in 2019. It doesn't really say anything about how she's going to split up her time or that how that works. I think the more interesting question here is just what we're headed for, obviously, is that at some point a female is going to get an opportunity to coach an NBA team, whether that's Becky Hammon or that's Christy Tolliver or that's somebody else, who knows who that's going to be. But at some point, that is a bridge that we're going to cross. And I think that just speaks to how does that work? I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I'm not sure whether anyone knows 100% how it's going to work.
Yeah.
I think that you'd probably be in a position where if I had to guess, or if it was me doing the hiring, I would probably want to hire someone who was already on the staff of my team, and I'm promoting them from an assistant coach to a head coach, which I know is sometimes a difficult transition when you go from being an assistant in a program.
But they've already garnered the respect of the players.
Which I think from a female perspective, because it would be so unique, because it would be new, I think that that would be important, that the moment that player or that coach ascended into the chair, that they would already have the player's respect. And I think that's a great point that you make, that that's really what you'd want to establish. Whereas if you brought in a female candidate from outside the organization who the players didn't know, who was a rookie head coach, I think that transition theoretically, potentially, could be more difficult. Look, we're in a much more enlightened era, and I think if you went back 20 or 30 years ago, the idea of a female ever coaching an NBA
team.
They
would scoff at that. They would scoff
at it.
It
would never even have been under consideration. So the fact that we're even considering that is a positive step forward. I do think it's interesting that, and I don't have this answer in front of me, but are there any women's Division I men's head coaches that are coaching the men in Division I basketball? Is there a woman coaching
the answer
Division
is no
I
to
basketball?
That. I'm going to tell you right now, I guess I don't have that for sure, but I'm going to guess the answer is no.
I would guess the answer is no as well, which it seems like that if before you step into the pressure cooker of the NBA, and that's not to say that the Division I job isn't a pressure cooker, but it just seems like the way that we would build this up is we would have coaches at lower levels coaching men. And I don't think you see it very often at the high school level. In fact, I don't think you see it very often at any level of basketball. Even you go down to the youth level, it's much more likely that you're going to have a dad coaching a girl's team than you are going to have a mom coaching a boy's team.
Yeah,
that's not to say
I can speak. I know of one coach in Olmsted Falls that was a woman coach that was coaching her son's team.
And they are
so
out there, don't get me wrong.
And it's very rare, I know. I understand.
But it's very rare. And I think that's one of the things that when you look at the challenges ahead for female coaches, it's who are the role models and what is the pathway where you have people that you can look at and say, well, look, Becky Hammon did it. Look, Christy Tolliver did it. Those are the people that are blazing the trail for others to be able to follow, but there just aren't as many. Obviously, going the other way, there's lots of men who have coached women. There's obviously men coaching men. I think the idea of women coaching men, it's just something that it's so new. There just isn't a lot of established pathways for young women, young coaches to be able to look at that and say, okay, here's what I need to do if I want to reach that level. And so the more it becomes common, the less of an issue it becomes, the less discussion it creates. So I think that's the interesting part of this is just the fact that hopefully it becomes commonplace as the women who get into these positions continue to do an outstanding job. It's just going to open up more opportunities for more women as we move forward.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, Mike. And we'll have to just see what does that mean? Like, how do we get there? What's the path? How long is it going to take to get there? I guess
it reminds me of the discussion that we had with Bruiser Flint and Dwayne Killings and Kamani Young, right? How do African-American coaches get opportunities? The reason why there aren't as many opportunities for African-American coaches is because there's not people in the room who look like them who want to hire them. And so if I'm the GM of an NBA team or I'm an owner of an NBA team and the people that are surrounding me are all male, the odds that I'm going to come up with the idea that a female is the best person for the job, it's probably not likely. I'm likely to find somebody who's more like me, who's more like the people that I'm comfortable with. And, you know, I think that speaks, whether it's race, whether that's gender, that's where the changes have to be made, is you have to get more people into those decision-making positions. And then that's how you start to make progress. But that is a slow, slow road, as we know.
Yep. All right. Well, Mike, we're going to take a break and hear a word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps, and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk really quickly. CJ McCollum has been elected as the new president of the Players Union, and while doing the, you know, I don't want to call it the publicity tour of this change coming, CJ McCollum hopped on the Woj pod, and I just thought this was an interesting quote. Player empowerment is everything. We want to continue to do what's best and what's right for the players. And obviously, you know, he's in an interesting situation being the teammate of Dame Lillard, who's supposedly not trying to force his way out of Portland, but I can't imagine that he's going to want to stay there much longer. And just that the matter of fact is that, you know, he's saying, we're here now. The floodgates have opened. Nothing's going to change. Player empowerment's going to be around. We're going to have to get used to it. And listen, I guess it's where we're at in the NBA. LeBron kind of paved the way for this. And I guess we're just going to have to live with it. Do you have any thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, first of all, I think in relation to CJ being elected as the union president, not a surprise, smart guy. He's an Ohio guy from Canton. Smart guy, went to Lehigh. So it seems like he's had...
That's my wife's alma mater, Mike.
There you go. All right. There you go. So yeah. Your wife must be smart.
She's pretty smart.
There you go.
Pretty smart.
There you go. But you wouldn't expect him to say anything different. It's not like he's going to be representing the players and come out and say, hey, we're looking to take things back to the way they were, where owners had all the power. He's just doubling down on a trend that we all know is happening. And when you ask me about what's my opinion on player empowerment, I always tend to side with the players when we think about labor disputes and all those things, because you're talking about billionaire owners battling against millionaire players. And I guess I just tend to side with the player perspective more often. The one thing that I don't like about the player empowerment era is if you have a contract, it's one thing if you're trying to force your way out in the last 6 months of your contract. It's another thing if we start seeing guys that sign 4 or 5 year extensions to get big money, and then a year or two into those extensions, they start agitating to be traded. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds, where you get your long-term security.
Yeah.
Plus you're able to dictate to teams where you want to go. To me, that's the one piece of it that I don't like. If you're a free agent, by all means, go where you want to go. It's like when LeBron left Cleveland. He had every right to leave Cleveland. I didn't like the fact that he left Cleveland. I think the biggest thing that bothered me was just the way that he did it.
You mean national TV? Come on.
And look, that was stupid of him to do that. I think if he had it to do over again, I don't know that he'd do it that same way. I think you'd do it in a much more quiet way. But that was the part that was troubling. I mean, obviously, yep. I didn't want to see him go. But, hey, he was a free agent. He had a right to go wherever he wanted to go. And so does every other player whose contract is up and they're looking for a better place to play or a new life or a different city or whatever it is. Great. But if you have 2 years on your contract, you shouldn't be going into management and demanding a trade and saying, hey, I'm only going to go play for these three franchises.
Yep.
In that case, if I'm the owners, I would have no problem taking a hard line and just being like, well, you know, whatever. You got to stick around and play here. And I know sometimes that's easier said than done, because if you get the reputation as an organization that doesn't take care of your stars, now stars aren't going to want to come there. And depending on what kind of market you're in, are you going to let the guy walk for nothing? Or are you going to try to get something back for him? So there's a lot of complications. It's a lot easier to sit here behind a microphone and say what owners and players should do. But if you're asking me how I feel about player empowerment, I would say I'm 98% in favor of it. And the 2% I don't like is when guys sign a contract and then don't honor that contract or try to bail out way early. Like I said, I'm okay if you want to bail out with 6 months left and start to poke around and see what's out there. But if you're doing that 2 or 3 years left on your deal, I'm not really a fan of that. So CJ McCollum will be a good successor to Chris Paul in the players union. I have no doubt.
What do you think of players take betting on themselves, Mike? Oh, the next story. Nerlens Noel is currently suing Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, according to a report. And I pulled this. I'm going to read this directly from Hoops Rumors so that I get my information correct. Knicks center Nerlens Noel has filed a lawsuit against Rich Paul and the Clutch Sports agency. The suit, which is filed in Dallas, Texas, claims that at a birthday party, at Ben Simmons' birthday party in 2017, Paul convinced Noel that he was a $100 million man. How much was Nerlens Noel drinking at this party? All right, anyways, and that if Noel fired agent Happy Walters and signed with him, Paul would get a max contract for him. He did that. The Mavericks offered him 4 years, $70 million, but he told him to turn it down and take a 1 year, $4.1 qualifying offer, and then got injured.
and then ended up getting a 2-year, $3.7 million contract, which was orchestrated by the Thunder, more by Russell Westbrook and Paul George rather than Chris Paul. And finally, the lawsuit claims that Noel learned that multiple teams, including the Sixers, Clippers, and Rockets, informed him that they attempted to get in touch with Paul about offering Noel a contract, but were unable to make contact. Noel left Clutch Sports in December of 2020 and is suing Paul and the agency for the loss of approximately $58 million stemming from the initial declined extension with Dallas. Your take on this whole situation?
There's a lot to unpack in what you just read of the facts of the case. I think what would be fascinating would be to go back and try to, if you're litigating this case, would be to read the different versions of what happened, to be able to hear from these other teams that whether or not they really offered money, is that real? Is that not real? What was Noel told? What did Rich Paul actually say to him? Well, I mean, again, ultimately it's up to the player, right? I mean, the agent is advising. It's not like the agent is ripping the pen out of Nerlens Noel's hands and saying, you can't sign this. Sure, you hire an agent to give you good advice.
You hire an agent to say, show me the money, right?
But in this case, if your agent tells you you're going to get more money, theoretically, the agent should be dialed into the market and what's going on out there. We know that doesn't always work out perfectly. Didn't work out for Dennis Schroeder this year. Didn't work out in this case for Nerlens Noel.
Worked out for Carlos Boozer.
It's just right. It just feels like this would be something that you'd have a hard time proving in court. I think it'd be interesting to see the documents, the stories, the anecdotes. I mean,
if he has a text message, then that's or something like that. That's pretty right. Damning evidence, right?
It would just be interesting to see if teams put out there, if there actually is evidence that teams were sniffing around or wanted to make offers or had internal communication about, hey, let's go and offer Nerlens Noel X amount of dollars. I think it's going to be hard to prove. And I mean, my
biggest issue is if an organization is really willing to offer Nerlens Noel $100 million, that organization needs to be thoroughly have their head examined. Agree? Okay. Like, am I mean? Is that a mean statement?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we can litigate whether or not Nerlens Noel, what he's worth, what he's not worth.
He's not worth $100 million.
He is not worth $100. He is not worth $100 million. I mean, I would agree
that he'd
you.
Be getting paid the same amount of money that Jared Allen is getting paid, right?
Look, I don't know what that says about Jared Allen or Nerlens Noel, but anyway, Nerlens Noel is going to make $27 million. His deal that he signed with the Knicks is guaranteeing him $27.7 million over the next 3 years. So he's going to make about $9 million a year. Is he worth $100 million? Yeah, that's still pretty good. Was he worth $100 million, whatever, in 2017 or whatever this happened?
Never.
I would say very unlikely. Very unlikely. However, we all know that sometimes crazy contracts do get given out and sometimes things don't go the way everybody planned. So to me, the interesting part of this, again, would be the discovery in the lawsuit and figuring out what was real, what there was really evidence for, and how much of it was just conjecture of various people speculating. Rich Paul speculating how much they thought he could get. Nerlens Noel thinking what he was going to get. These other teams, did they really have solid offers that they had put together that they went to Rich Paul with and said, hey, we want to sign this guy. And he's like, no, we're going to make more money, and turned it down and didn't even present those offers to Nerlens Noel. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but it would seem to me that if I'm the agent, even if I don't think the player should take an offer, if I get an offer, it seems like I should at least present it to the player for him to make a decision and turn it down. I could show it to him and say, here's a deal that's on the table. I think it's a terrible deal for you. I think we can get more money. So I don't know what evidence you're going to have to be able to recoup those losses from Clutch and Rich Paul, but it would be interesting to sit in the discovery room and find and read some of the different things, documents and communications that may have gone on in relation to this case. Otherwise, I don't know. I mean, if I had to bet, I would say that Nerlens Noel is not going to win this lawsuit. Because it seems like it would be a lot of rumor and innuendo and not a lot of
speculation. A lot of speculation.
Yeah, it seems like there would not be. It's not like they have I mean, maybe they do. They have contracts that were drawn up that were never signed. Do teams keep records of those things? I have no idea. So Nerlens Noel was not a $100 million player. And if Rich Paul was telling him that he was, then he got some bad advice. He wouldn't be the first player to get bad advice from an agent. And you walk away and
like you said earlier, Dennis Schroeder, that was terrible advice.
You learned a hard lesson. But ultimately, ultimately the player has to be responsible. Yep. The agent is only giving advice. The player ultimately has to take action or not take action. And so I would be very surprised if Nerlens Noel was able to win this lawsuit.
Yep. All right. Last topic for tonight, Mike. Overtime Elite. Now, I'll be completely honest. I feel very ignorant on this topic. I know that there's a big push to offer players alternative ways out, like not having to play college basketball. And this is one of those. And I know that the NBA is doing their own thing with, there's a, you know, the NBA G League Ignite team, right? That's the name of that team, the Ignite.
Correct.
So this is kind of similar to that, but it's an alternative way to get players to prepare for playing at the NBA level or playing at the next level.
This is younger players. These are high school players.
Yeah.
So the NBA G League is limited to players who are coming out of high school. I don't believe that the G League is considering or allowed at this point to sign players who are still in high school. The G League is not in the business of educating players. I do believe that Overtime Elite has some component of education. I could be wrong. But what's interesting is that you have players who are signing with Overtime Elite that are juniors and seniors in high school. So this most recent player who signed with Overtime Elite is Tyler Smith, who is ranked the number 8 basketball prospect in the class of 2023, which means he's a junior in high school. I believe I saw that he signed a contract that was for 2 years. Let me see if I can pull it up exactly what his contract was worth. So basically he's saying that what he wants to do is to be able to train like a professional. His goal is not to play in college, it's to play in the NBA. He said, this will get me there faster, make me more ready once I'm there. He signed a 2-year, quote, 7-figure contract with Overtime Elite. So 7 figures means he could be making $500,000 a year or slightly above that is what I'm guessing. So is this a good pathway for a kid if you're a top 15, top 20 player in your class as a high school player? It would be really, really hard if I'm a parent and that kid was my son and he could go as a junior in high school and sign a $1 million contract for 2 years to go and play with Overtime Elite instead of playing high school basketball. I'd have a really hard time advising my son not to do that.
I agree.
And G League too. You think about those guys that Jalen Green and Kuminga that go and play in the G League. They make some money, more money than you or I are probably ever going to make in a year. And they do that for 1 year.
We're teacher salaries, Mike. Come on. We get so much money.
I don't think we're probably ever going to make $500,000 a year in our career. So it'd be hard. We'd be hard pressed. There you go. You're still not earning. You're not necessarily earning that money. But nonetheless, I think that there are more viable paths to the NBA than there ever been. So now you have Overtime Elite. You have the G League. You have NIL now in college basketball, where if you are an elite college basketball prospect, if you are a potential NBA player and you go to one of the premier Power 5 conference schools, you're going to have an opportunity to benefit and make some money from NIL, whether that be jersey sales, whether that's autographs, whether that's endorsements, whatever it is. I think we're only beginning to touch the tip of the iceberg on what the best players in college basketball or college football are going to be able to make through NIL. So you go from a situation where 10 years ago, there was no way to make any money unless you became draft eligible and you actually went to the NBA. Now you're going to have a lot of kids who, let's face it, I think one of the things that people worry about, right, is that a kid goes to the G League or goes to this overtime elite and it doesn't work out for them and they don't make the NBA. You think about some of the kids that back in the early days of coming out and as a high school player and trying to make it to the league. So you become ineligible for college basketball. The name that keeps popping into my head is Corleone Young. You probably don't even remember that name.
But well, I know he was. I know the Latin name Corleone.
Okay, well there you go. Anyway, totally unrelated to the Corleone that you're thinking of, but nonetheless, he was a kid. He was a highly rated high school player and came out, didn't make the NBA, and to be honest, I don't know whatever happened to him, but couldn't go back to college, didn't ever earn any money as a professional basketball player. Maybe played in Europe, I have no idea. But I guess my point here is that Corleone Young. I think Corleone was with a K though.
Oh yeah, it is. I got it here. Corleone Young, basketball career. He slid in the draft. He was drafted by the Detroit Pistons. He appeared in only 3 games and at the end of the lockout shortened 99 season and scored 13 total points. After he played in China under coach and NBA player Stacey Keim. He averaged 18 points a game in China. Then he moved to the Australian League and averaged 27 points per game.
He's played. So he probably ended up making a decent living.
He played only through 2006 and never played again after that. So he only played for 6 years. So, yeah.
I guess my point here is that he probably never made $500,000 in a season the way a kid who signs with Overtime Elite as a junior is going to make. And like I said, I would have a hard time telling people to turn that down. What's going to happen to college basketball?
Well, Go ahead and ask your question. Is this turning it into what we have overseas, essentially? I mean, look at Luka Doncic. He came over here, and how many – he'd already played 2 or 3 years of professional basketball before he got over here, right?
I mean – yeah, I think the question – I think the question with this is – so there's 2 pieces to this whole thing. I think one of the pieces is that whether it's Overtime Elite, whether it's the G League Ignite, whether it's NIL through college basketball, whether or not any or all of those 3 end up succeeding – in quotes, in their current form, I don't know. I have no idea. 10 years from now, will Overtime Elite be around? 10 years from now, will the G League Ignite still be a way for players to go from high school to the NBA? I don't know. Is the NBA going to open it back up to high school players where you don't have to have that 1 year being removed from your graduating class? I don't know. What kind of impact is NIL going to have on college basketball? Who knows what that's going to look like? If you have a bunch of players that are going to go and do these other minor professional leagues, what's left for Division I college basketball? I don't know the answer to that. I think it's going to look drastically different.
I don't know.
10 years from now than it does today.
I agree. It's going to look different, but it almost might be better. You know why? Because people are going to start to have players that are playing for 4 years again. Like I'm not trying to like say the game might not be better. Like, the quality of the games might not be better, but the fandom and the buying into team, like I can't keep track of players that are on my on college teams anymore.
I know because they're
playing 1 year and they're out. Like, so maybe this will in the long run actually help them. I don't know if that's counterintuitive. Maybe I am speaking out of turn here, but I think there might be some benefits that they're not really thinking about here, Mike.
It's possible. What you just described is certainly possible. At the same time, it's not clear. Likely. I don't think it's likely because here's why. Because I think what's happening, and these things that are happening now with Overtime Elite and the G League, you're just seeing more and more of a fracturing of the audience that used to be all watching college basketball. And I would include myself. I don't watch college basketball really anymore. I just don't. I don't have time. I don't follow it nearly as closely as I... Yeah, but I'm not filling it out from any base of knowledge. I'm just filling it out because I'm filling it out, and it's what I've always done, and the tournament is still exciting.
You're not listening to Fran Fraschilla's takes on that?
I just don't know enough about... I just don't have enough time. I don't have enough time and bandwidth to be able to dedicate. I'm watching... I choose to spend my time that I do have for professional sports. I choose to use it with the NBA and not with college basketball. But there's just a fractured audience, because that's what, when you think about Overtime Elite, I think what they're trying to do is they're looking at like the followings on social media that these kids that they're going to sign already have as high school juniors. And now you can market highlights and games and all these things. You can do it through social media. So you're going to attack it from a different channel, a different media channel than, say, traditional college basketball. And I don't know how this is all going to shake out, but I just know that the landscape for how players matriculate to the NBA is going to be different. It's going to be continuously changing and morphing. And 10 years from now, I don't know if Overtime Elite will be here. I don't know if the G League in its current form will be here. I have no idea what college basketball is going to look like. But I do know that there will be other alternative paths for players to go to the NBA other than just going to play at North Carolina or Duke or Ohio State or Kentucky, whatever it might be. I just think the landscape is going to be completely different. And this is just the first step in whatever is going to happen. And I don't know what that whatever is going to be, but it's going to look drastically different. So...
Yeah, I can completely buy into that, Mike. And you know what? I think the NCAA needs, you know, I know they're implementing this NIL stuff, but I think they need to pivot quickly if they want to save what they've built. Because,
well, the question becomes, what is the NCAA even anymore? Does the NCAA even have a role at the Division I level? I think NCAA Division III basketball and football, Division III sports are going to remain. I think they'll be relatively unchanged. I think Division II probably relatively unchanged. I think Division I basketball and major college football, you look at, what is the NCAA even doing for them? You see what Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC and the Big Ten and Pac-12 and ACC talking about getting together in football. There's just what the landscape is going to look like. And even if the NCAA exists in its current form, I have my doubts that the NCAA is going to have jurisdiction over the big time schools in both college basketball and college football 10 years from now.
College football has a higher likelihood of surviving because it's such a moneymaker that I think it will stay.
I think it'll survive. Look, it's not like 10 years from now, the University of North Carolina Tar Heels are still going to be playing college basketball, but they might be playing in college basketball with a 50-team super league of all the best schools, and then you're going to have your mid-majors and your other schools that who knows what their landscape looks like, and those best 50 schools are just going to share revenue and stage their own March Madness, and you could tell me anything and I'd believe it.
Okay. Can I tell you that J.R. Smith is going to be playing college golf?
College golf. I saw that. We actually missed that. I'm surprised we didn't talk about that last week because I think that broke
He was seeking and it wasn't official, so I didn't want to bring it up and then be disappointed, but I'm really excited. And it's. I think, first of all, I want to commend him. I want to commend him for going back to school. I don't know if you've been following him on the social medias, Mike.
I have not been following him closely.
He tweeted, man, I got to get this English paper done before midnight. And he tweeted it at 9 p.m. last night and that he was still working on it. And then he sent a tweet at 11:15. Woo, turned it in.
I have two comments on this story. One semi-serious and one not so serious. So the first semi-serious question is, what university is he going to, by the way?
It's a Division II school. University. Hold on. Oh, crap. It's in Greensboro. Hold on.
All right. Well, whatever. By the time you look it up, the podcast should be over. But anyway, imagine that you're a parent and you send your child off to a Division II school to be a golfer. And you think, wow, we're going to be at a nice, wholesome school, and he's on the golf team, and everything's going to go well. And then all of a sudden, you look up and you're like,
it is an HBCU, though, Mike, too.
You're like, hey, J.R. Smith is now my son's teammate. Very interesting. Very interesting. J.R. Smith, hopefully he's got some money put away. He probably could throw some pretty good parties, I'm guessing. Could be interesting. Let's just put it that way. And then my second less serious question is just a tip for the golf coach there. Don't serve soup for the pregame meal. Do not serve soup for the pregame meal.
So it's A&T State University. It's an HBCU. He talked about Ray Allen being a big impact on him going back to school. Ray Allen, he got into conversations with Ray Allen, and Ray Allen, you know, NCA&T. It's a HBCU in Greensboro, North Carolina, Mike. Listen, I'm excited for him. I'm glad. You know, I think he did have a comment on an Instagram today, because someone from this website that posts things, House of Highlights, imagine randomly seeing J.R. Smith on his way to class, and they posted a thing of him, like, with Henny or something, like walking down the thing, and he wrote, "It's not funny anymore. I'm not really mad at the whoever posted this, but they constantly post this stuff, and it's a negative depiction, and it wasn't necessarily me at my finest moment, and you need to stop doing that." So I kind of commend, like, listen, JR is who JR is, but at the same time, like.
In all seriousness, congratulations.
Yeah, yeah.
Congratulations for taking the game of golf seriously enough to pursue that, and for going back to school. Look, I would never disparage anyone who's trying to go back and become more educated and chase a dream that he's probably had, who knows, whenever he picked up the game of golf, whether that was when he was younger or I'm guessing when he picked it up during the league.
No, he picked it up. He started playing 13 years ago, Mike.
So he started playing while he was, in the league.
It was I read the article about it. Like one of the guys he was working with in Houston got him to start playing. I don't know who. Oh, it was John Lucas. He was attending a camp with John Lucas down in, and John Lucas just took him out to play a round of golf and immediately fell in love with it. When he went on the first time he started golfing, he was hitting 300 yard drives. So there you go, Mike.
Congratulations to J.R. Smith. I hope that he sticks with it. I hope he stays with the team. I hope he graduates, and he's going to be a guy that, although he had some crazy moments here in Cleveland, he also had some really good ones and was a huge and instrumental part of bringing an NBA championship.
Including being in the suite next to me at Baker Mayfield's Browns debut with his shirt off, and me and my dad's boss's son egging him on to take his shirt off, and then immediately took the shirt off and threw it into the fans. So
I
was.
I remember that well. I remember that well.
I'm pretty sure I sent that to you.
You did. I remember it well. So one last time, congratulations to J.R. Smith. I don't think we have any other bottom of the barrel stories to discuss at this point. We have blown past our own self-imposed 30-minute deadline. So I think we probably should wrap it up there. I will say, before you get your final word in, do not forget to check out our Buckeye Coaches Clinic that we are putting on in association with United Basketball Clinics. Go to the Hoopheads Pod website and you'll be able to get connected to where you need to go in order to sign up for the clinic September 25th at Olmsted Falls High School from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Jason, any final words before we get out?
I don't have anything. I look forward to hopefully having something a little more exciting for us to talk about next week. But, you know, we're getting – listen, this is kind of what we expected, that this week and next the next few weeks are going to be slow. But, you know, when you look at the schedule, Mike, we have less than 2 months until the NBA season will officially be underway. So it's going to come quick. I believe the first game is on October 17th. So here we are on August 24th, get a game in less than two months. I'm excited, and we'll just have to see what happens in the next 2 months.
Well said. Last thing, don't forget, if you haven't subscribed to Quest for the Best, the six-part series that will be coming out in the first week of September that is here on the Hoopheads Podcast Network from Matt Issa. He's put a ton of work in it. If you like debating who are the best historical players and current players in the NBA, you will not want to miss this series. Quest for the Best. You can find it on all your favorite podcast apps. Please go check that out. And in the meantime, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.